12 years into the millennium, the big splashy comic book movie is a predictable, formulaic piece of Hollywood machinery. You cast a few wisecracking superheroes, mix in some freakish bad guys and spectacular special effects, and ka-ching, another summer blockbuster rolls off the assembly line. With all that, it's easy to forget just how radical and fresh Men in Black seemed when it came out in 1997. It was based on a Marvel comic, and this smart, funny sci-fi adventure starring Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones was instantly, hugely, unexpectedly popular with critics and audiences, including me. Men in Black was directed by Barry Sonnenfeld, and this week he's back with the third movie in the series. Barry Sonnenfeld, welcome to Studio 360.
Thanks, Kurt. Great to be here.
So, it's been 15 years since the first Men in Black film and 10 since the previous sequel. What compelled you to return to this idea and this universe?
Well, for me, the reason I'm doing it again is I read a script about 3 years ago that was fantastic. It was different. It wasn't a tired, let's get a new villain to come to Earth and destroy Earth and our guys have to save it. Because our movie involves time travel, we get to go back to
one of my favorite science fiction notions.
Well, you know what? They're really hard, as it turns out. I can't tell you how many times Will Smith and I watch Back to the Future because that one sets up the rules. The audience understands the rules, and they're never confused. And that was our goal, to make a time travel, Men in Black, double genre movie that works.
Last chance. Who are you and what do you know?
I'm an agent of Men in Black, but I'm from the future. We're partners. 25 years from now, you're going to recruit me. And 14 years after that, the guy you didn't let me kill today at Coney Island, he escapes from prison and jumps back in the past and unleashes a full-scale invasion of Earth. We had about 19 hours to catch him and kill him, so really, we need to go right now.
All right.
And did you feel, okay, Men in Black 1, amazing, changes the nature of filmmaking, makes everybody lots of money, makes you famous. Did you feel like, the second one, not as good as it could have been? I need to redeem it?
The problem for us about the second one is we forgot or misunderstood what made the first one so good. We thought it was comedy. So the second one, what we did is, it's probably funnier than Men in Black 1, but it doesn't have really strong emotion. It doesn't have a great villain. You don't want anyone to know they're working on a comedy when they're doing a comedy. You don't want the cinematographer to know because he'll make it too bright. You don't want the composer to know because he'll make the music too happy. And you definitely don't want the actors to know because they'll make it, quote, funny.
If not mugging, but it's a subtle performance thing?
Yeah, I think what you have to do is create great writing so the situations are funny or absurd. And then the actors play the reality for that absurd situation. And in the second one, we just had too much of Frank the Pug singing I Will Survive.
Yeah.
Movies are very plastic, and it's a really weird medium, and sometimes you think you know all the answers.
And you don't know those things until you've shot half of it sometimes?
No, you usually don't know it until you shoot and edit the entire movie.
Huh.
On Adam's Family, I kept saying to Dee Dee Allen, who's one of the great editors ever, she did Reds and Bonnie and Clyde, I kept saying, what's wrong with our third act? And she said, I can fix it. And we came in the next day, and I said, it's so much better. What did you do to the third act? She said, I didn't touch it, but I lost that scene in the second act that was repetitive to what's in the third act. And you don't, you know, your brain can take all sorts of leaps, but until you see it acted
put together,
and
yeah.
put together,
yeah.
I can't tell you in every movie I've done how the biggest problems that you think the audience is going to have are never where the problems are.
This movie, Men in Black 3, is your first 3D movie?
Yes.
You started out as a cinematographer, and you have said, quote, 3D is like a perfect medium for the way I see. What does that mean?
The best way to shoot 3D movies or to project 3D movies is that the imaging should be very much on axis. The eye line of actors should be towards the lens. Profiles don't work well. Panning doesn't work well. Tracking towards and away from objects do.
It's more old-fashioned, right?
Well, I wouldn't say old-fashioned. Actually, I would say uniquely Sonnenfeldian.
Uh-huh.
I shot the first three Coen Brothers movies.
Right.
Blood Simple, Raising Arizona, and Miller's Crossing. And when I saw A Serious Man, which they did fairly recently ago, I said to them, it's the best movie you've done since I was your cinematographer. And there's about 12 movies in between. And they said, why? And I said, it's the first movie since I worked with you where you didn't pan. I think panning is a very lazy way of storytelling, and it actually is the enemy of 3D.
So you shot the first three Coen Brothers movies. There's some shared DNA in some of their films, a certain arch looniness. Do you feel like you learned, you took certain things from working with them on a few films that is now part of your directorial approach?
No, I think they took things from me.
Really?
Yeah.
Damn them.
I was glad to share. The truth is, the first time we were on the set of our first movie, Blood Simple, was the first day that Joel, Ethan, or I had ever been on a movie set. I did not work my way up as a cinematographer. Joel hadn't directed anything except a student film. Ethan was a philosophy major at Princeton and worked as a statistical typist at Macy's. And there we were shooting Blood Simple. So we shared a common visual style, which is that the camera can be a character or actor in your movie. So I sometimes use the camera as a way to grab the audience and say, come on, let's go on this adventure. Like, for instance, when Will jumps off the Chrysler Building in Men in Black 3, there's a self-consciousness in some cases to the camera, falling through space in ways that cameras can't do.
Uh-huh.
The fact that the camera will independently of motivation push in on a character are all things that I think unconsciously bring audiences in to the filmmaking experience of watching this movie.
I'm interested in what a cinematographer can do to have different emotional effects. I mean, in addition to making movies with the Coens, for instance, you shot big studio movies like Big, like When Harry Met Sally. And, of course, in that film, everybody knows the famous Katz's Deli scene with Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if you could walk us through what you did behind the camera on that scene to make it work better. And I guess I should give a heads up to parents with little kids around. You might not want them to hear this.
Nothing. It's just that all men are sure it never happened to them, and most women at one time or another have done it, so you do the math.
You don't think that I can tell a difference?
No.
Get out of here.
A lot of times what makes a comedy scene work is actually length and pregnancy. And, you know, oftentimes really good jokes are a function of setup more than punchline.
Are you okay?
Oh.
So what we have here is until Meg starts her orgasm, and some of this is direction, some of this is editing, but the whole scene takes place in over the shoulders. There's not a close-up.
You're seeing her over
Billy Crystal's shoulder or vice versa. Or you're in a profile two shot. So you're not cutting to her close-up until you need to when she starts the orgasm. So that's where the emphasis starts.
Oh, God. Oh.
I'll have what she's having.
I have seen some of your list of favorite movies, and certainly we share Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove and 2001 as well.
Yeah.
Are there things you actually either consciously or then subsequently unconsciously find you're doing Kubrickian things?
No one can do Kubrickian things, but I will say that in every movie I make, I try to put the recall code from Strangelove, which is OPEPOE, and you'll see that in many movies I've shot for the Coens, or the CRM 114 discriminator, which is a box that receives the recall code in Dr. Strangelove. There are several places in Men in Black 3, and no one really thinks of him as a comedy director, but I got to say, Strangelove is as brilliant a comedy as I've ever seen. And there are scenes that go on for 3, 4, 5 minutes without a cut. The opening shot where George C. Scott comes out of the bathroom in the underground bunker with all the mirrors is 4 or 5 minutes, not a single cut. And the audience unconsciously is aware of that and realizes they're in the scene with them. And Kubrick never cuts to a close-up for a punchline, except in a couple of places where it fails, when I think he fell in love too much with George C. Scott's comedy. It's the only thing about that movie that isn't perfect.
That's interesting, because again, as you say, you try to make funny movies where the people don't know they're making a funny movie. One of the reasons that movie works so well is for that, except, as you say, I never thought of that. When they go in for George C. Scott's crazy bluster.
What did you say?
I said Premier Kissoff is a degenerate atheist.
Mr. President, I formally request that you have his ignorant boot.
I'm sorry.
Mr. President, I think they're trying the number.
And I think that Kubrick must have accidentally fallen in love with that. Again, tonally, it's the only thing in that movie that's slightly self-conscious.
Oh, you warm up thing for it. Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
You said things more than once about how this is a job you're hired to do. You're not this, you know, crazy auteur. You have to do it as good as you can to make money for the studio. Is that just charming self-deprecation, or do you really feel you're different from a certain kind of movie director?
Okay, Kurt, you found me out. It's charming self-deprecation. You were the first one to actually ask me the question straight on. Yes, it's charming self-deprecation.
Good. So you're just as much an artist as any of those guys.
I have just as much ego as any of those guys.
And although I presume you're happy to make good movies and be paid well and all that, when you're in the middle of shooting a movie, is there anything good about that in terms of the way it makes you feel?
You know, I've come around to really love directing. I love working with actors. I love being in charge of hundreds of manly men. I love that someone can bring me a cappuccino and I can reject it because it looks more like a latte and doesn't have enough foam. Although I'm more of a black coffee guy, so that doesn't happen that often. I can say every morning I'd like a deviled egg, and I get it.
So it's just like you're a dictator of your little country for 6 months.
Yeah, and then I go home and I say to Sweetie, my wife, where's the butter? And she means, do you want me to go to the fridge and get you the butter? And I go, no, I'm sorry, dear. I'll go get the butter.
So really, the stress and all the moving parts and the jillions of dollars and all that is you've made your peace with that.
I should be so lucky that I get to do this. And stress is a great dietary tool.
Barry Sonnenfeld, thank you very much.
Great.
Barry Sonnenfeld is the director, among other movies, of Men in Black 3, which is out in theaters this weekend. And think you can find all those Kubrickian codes that Barry Sonnenfeld said are in his movies? If so, let us know at studio360.org.